Yo, check us out. Chuck D, Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yella from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DOC, the Diggy Diggy motherfucking God.
Yo, what's up? This is your boy, Z-Man.
What up, dog? This is E-Shot.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfucker.
It's your boy, DJ Paul KOL from 36 Block.
Young Busy Bone.
Vice Warp.
It's your man, Mastermind of Hellraiser.
Yo, this is DJ Ready Red.
What up? This is the real Rick Ross, and you're listening to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
If you haven't had a chance to go back in the archive and listen to that show, man, this guy, he really needs no introduction, but I'm going to give him one anyway. He's produced for many, many legends, Mac Dre, Sebo, Selly Cell, the list goes on and on. I'm talking about the one and only One Drop Scott. Let me bring him on right now. Let's see how he's doing, man. One Drop Scott, how you doing, brother?
I'm good. How are you guys? I'm glad to be here with you, man.
Man, it's a huge, huge honor. I interviewed you back in the day for the Murder Dog, I've always wanted to have you on this show as well because we're pretty much the audio Murder Dog, you know what I'm saying?
That's great, yeah.
But, man, your career, you know, it really goes back. I mean, you've been in it for a minute. Tell our listeners, you know, how you got your start and what inspired you to get into music.
Okay, well, my father, a lot of people don't know, but my father is Thomas Rasulala. He was an opera singer, and he was Kunta Kinte's father in Roots. He also starred on many, many TV shows, Star Trek, Twilight Zone, The Jeffersons, Sanford and Son. He was in Blackula. He was part of the black exploitation film thing in the 70s. He was Cool Breeze. My father was Cool Breeze as well. And he gave me, I guess, my genetics to be able to do what I do. You know. But I
in
started
the DNA.
In 19, wait, yeah, the DNA, yeah. I started way back in 1972, bro. Way, 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 way back.
Wow.
Yeah,
yeah, that's amazing. what was it like? I mean, Roots is one of the biggest TV productions of all time. What was it like growing up with your dad playing the father of Kunta Kinte in that in production?
Well, at that point, my father was no longer in the house, but being, you know, just being around my father and, you know, learning from him, just basically what he showed me just in his daily life was what I picked up on. And, you know, he didn't necessarily steer me toward music. I just went there on my own, but he always encouraged me and helped me with whatever I wanted to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So when you were a kid, like, were you in band and anything like that? Or, like, what instruments did you pick up and start playing?
Okay, yeah. So when I was a kid, I grew up in L.A., and I wanted to be on Soul Train. Okay, so that was my main thing. I wanted to be on Soul Train. I wouldn't even think about playing no music. I wanted to dance. I wanted to be a dancer on Soul Train. And so
yeah.
I got together with my brothers and three other girls, and we got our little routine together, went up there to audition to get in, and realized, found out that I was not old enough to get on there. So, but I started playing the trumpet. That was my first instrument, actually, the trumpet. But I then moved to the steel drums, man. You know what the steel drum is?
The steel drum is, you're going to have to break it down for me. I'm not too musically inclined.
Okay,
but...
yeah. So, yeah, so the steel drum comes from Trinidad. And
okay.
When I moved from L.A. to the Bay Area. And when I moved from L.A., I moved to Berkeley, California, bro. And this was in 1972. And Berkeley in 1972, it was basically berserkly, bro. And I'm a kid from L.A., and it was driving me crazy. I didn't know what to do. I was culture shocked, basically. So my father
took me
over to, yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, so my father took me over to Bushrod Park, where they had a steel drum instructor, and asked me if I wanted to learn how to play these steel drums. You know, so anyway, the steel drum is an oil drum that's pounded out and they make a musical instrument out of an oil drum. And yeah, so that was my second instrument, and that's when I started playing the steel drum. I eventually joined a band playing the steel drums, and I was just like 13 years old at the time, and we started playing around the nightclubs in Berkeley and in San Francisco, basically the entire Bay Area. The band was called Salsa de Berkeley, and yeah, I played the steel drums in that band, Jeff Norrell, Johnny Otis, Butch Haynes, a lot of very famous Bay Area musicians were in that band. So, yeah,
I know who would have known that answer. The homie, rest in peace, Fresh Kid Ice, the Two Live Crew, being that he was from Trinidad originally.
Yeah.
The drums is like the central foundation to music in general, is it not, pretty much?
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. You know, being a drummer, I was a drummer in the band. You know, a lot of people don't realize that I had a whole musical career before I even became a hip hop producer, bro. Have you ever heard of the group called Confunction?
Yeah, I heard of Confunction back in the day.
Right. I played with Confunction when I was like 18 years old. I toured all around the country with them, and bro, I finally wound up on Soul Train with Confunction. You can check me out if you.
You were on Soul
ahead.
Train with Confunction. No, I was just going to say that had to have made your dream come true right there.
Absolutely. Actually, I was on there twice. I was on there with Confunction, and then I was on there a few months later with Bill Summers and Summers Heat. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
surreal.
Man, so. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, I started in music back before any drum machine was ever even created, bro. You know, you had to, you know, rehearse and practice and be a real musician before you could even step to the studio, bro. That's just how it was.
Yeah. Then none of these Fruity Loops or these programs. It was actual instrumentation.
Yeah. And you're right. You had to learn how to play that thing, too.
Yeah, we just had soul legend Howard Johnson, Night Flight on not too long ago.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of from that era, too. You know, that was like when hip hop was in its infancy. Right. At what point did you start, you know, taking a liking to hip hop?
Well, man, I had a group called, I had a group in the early 80s called the Freaky Executives. And I was actually in L.A. and I was filming a video with Sheila E. You know Sheila E., Sheila Escobedo?
Absolutely, with Prince and, yeah.
Right. So, right. I was filming the Glamorous Life video with Sheila, because I used to date Sheila back when we were just teenagers and whatever. Anyway, so I'm filming this video down there in L.A., the Hollywood, I guess it was the Holiday Inn on Sunset. And I'm sitting in my room, and I could see Hollywood Boulevard outside my window. It was either Hollywood or something. No, it was Hollywood Boulevard. Anyway, so I'm looking out, and I see this big crowd out on the corner, and the hell of music going on. I'm like, man, what's going on out there? So I look out, and I see it's breakdancing. It's a big old breakdancing thing going on out there. You know, cats is out there breakdancing, big crowd. And then about 5 minutes later, the police showed up and broke up, and they took people to jail. I'm like, man, that's messed up. And so me and my friend wrote a song called I Reserve the Right to Party Each and Every Night. And that was a rap song. And I had a group at that time, like I said, called the Freaky Executives. We wrote this song, and we debuted the song live, and the song just blew up, man. And we actually got signed to Warner Brothers from that song, just from that one song. Just, you know, and back in the day, you had to play live. You didn't have any, there was no social media, nothing like that. So everything that you did was all word of mouth. But, man, bro, we would sell out nightclubs all around the Bay Area. The Stone, the Orpheum. I mean, every single nightclub had lines around the corner for this group, bro. And that's what started me in rap music, was that one song. And from watching somebody get busted on the corner, that's what got me into rap music, bro.
Now, this is obviously before Fight for Your Right to Party by the Beastie Boys. Do you think maybe they was influenced by your group, the Freaky Executives?
Oh, you know, hey, you want to hear, here's the crazy story. Okay, the Freaky Executives cut that song with this man named Norman Kerner. All right, we cut that song in his studio, and he sent that song out to his best friend that he grew up with, Rick Rubin. Okay, the producer for the Beastie Boys. He was trying to get us signed, right? He's like, man, I got this group. They're hot. They're hot as fuck. I want you to get the song. So he sent the song to him. Bruh, within a few months, Beastie Boys came out with that song. I was something about the same, damn near the same lyric as my song. I Reserve the Right to Party Each and Every Night. Their song was I something. What was their song called? I can't remember.
Fight for Your Right to Party.
Yep.
It was off
Fight
the Life
right
is Ill album.
Yep.
Yeah,
Fight for Your Right to Party. My song was I Reserve the Right to Party Each and Every Night. So they changed it up a little bit, but it was the same concept. You feel me?
Yeah. So it basically pretty much, it was ganked pretty much.
They ganked the idea. They didn't gank the actual song, but they ganked the idea for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. The idea, because you know, they might have added their own twist or whatnot, but
absolutely.
You know, you had
yeah.
it, you had it first, and a mutual acquaintance happened to be Rick Rubin, so that's definitely doesn't seem like a coincidence at all. Man, that's wild. Did you ever get at Rick Rubin about that or the Beastie Boys?
Well, you know, here's the thing. Like I said, I didn't know Rick Rubin, the guy that we recorded this. The guy, okay, we had a spec deal with this guy over in Richmond. His name was Norman Kerner. His best friend was Rick Rubin, or one of his good friends that he grew up with or whatever. So that was the connection. I never actually really knew Rick Rubin. So I wasn't even tripping off that shit really though, bro. I don't give a fuck about all that, you know.
Yeah.
It's whatever, bro.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, where the Beastie Boys, what are they doing now, the Beastie Boys?
Well, I know one of them passed, MCA.
Right.
He passed away
right.
a few years ago. And the other two, I don't think, are doing anything, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. And so, you know, they're basically, if they do do anything, they're still living off that same song. You feel me? So whatever, bro. It's all good.
Yeah. Well, you kept it moving anyway. You know,
yeah.
What came after that, though? Like, how long did the Freaky Executives last after that?
Okay, yeah, so, right, the Freaky Executives got signed to Warner Brothers, and that messed us up because we were, the Freaky Executives were a blend of funk. It was like kind of like Parliament or something with a Latin twist to it. And so
yeah.
when we got signed, Benny Medina signed us to the R&B section of Warner Brothers, bro. And that messed us up because we weren't an R&B band. We were more like a worldish kind of all, you know, like a pop world band, you know. It wasn't a pigeonhole kind of sound. You feel me?
Yeah. Yeah. Benny Medina, the kind of like...
The sound that we had was the sound that is now. It's like now,
yeah.
when you put, if you turn on the radio now, you're going to hear white folks, you're going to hear black folks, you're going to hear Hispanic, you know, you're going to hear everything. Back when I was coming up, you had rock radio, you had African-American radio, R&B, whatever, you had jazz, you had Latin. Everything had its own little area, period. And the advent of hip-hop, bro. That blended everything together, man. Blended everything.
Yeah. It sounds like you guys had like an original sound, and you wanted to keep it. You didn't want it to be, what would you say, like messed
yeah.
with at that time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well. Yeah. Yeah. Right. And so what happened with us? We got signed, and then they stuck us with a producer that, you know, that Benny Medina thought was going to get whatever sound that he thought. That we should have, and that fucked the whole thing up, and we wound up just basically getting dropped from the whole thing because it didn't work out. And that's when
yeah.
I turned straight to rap music, bro. But I'll tell you what, during that time, right before I got signed to Warner Brothers, bro, I, you know, it was taking a while, and the band was faltering. You know, with the band, you only have a window of opportunity to make something happen. And our window was closing rapidly, and I could see this shit, right? So I was like, man, let me see what else is going on. So I decided to make a rap record with a friend of mine, and the rap record was called Surf or Die. And we actually got signed to Profile Records, bro. Bay Area band signed to a major label, you know, out of the Bay Area. And it was called Surf or Die. It's called the Surf MCs. And I signed with Warner Brothers on the same night that I signed with Profile Records. So the way I did it was I signed as a producer for Profile Records and I signed as an artist to Warner Brothers. So, yeah, actually I started my rap thing before I even, you know, got dropped from Warner Brothers. I was already signed to Profile Records as a producer, but I still rapped on the record. Actually, you can go right now and look up Surf MC New Year, and it's on the Christmas and the Hollis album, and the album has Run DMC, bunch of those old.
It has another. I think it has Sweet T on there. I just interviewed her too. She was on Profile.
Yeah.
Wow, a lot of acts on Profile at that time. This was probably before DJ Quick and Second to None
yeah.
got there. Did you do a lot of touring with them, with Run DMC and, you know, Sweet T and
no,
all them?
Not at all, because like I said, I signed as a producer for, you know,
uh-huh.
for the Surf MCs, and I just kept my band, the Freaky Executives, and I just kept working with my band, and then we started working on that album, and I did the album with the Surf MCs, and then they got another rapper to take my place because I was actually rapping in that group, bro. if you go and look up Surf MC New Year, Christmas and Hollis off the Christmas and Hollis album, you can hear me rapping on that thing, bro. It's called Surf
You're one
MC
of the
New
early
Year.
Bay pioneers, man. That's yes, dope. Because this is around the time Mercola Records was popping in Los Angeles. You know, Egyptian Lover, all them guys, you know.
Exactly, man. You know what? I came up as a jazz musician, you know, Latin percussionist and so on. And my peers were, you know, they told me, man, what are you doing with that rap shit, man? That shit ain't nothing, man. That shit's not going to last, Scotty. Why are you doing that, man? I'm like, bro, this shit is from the ghetto, cousin. I don't know what you're talking about, but the ghetto ain't going nowhere. This shit ain't going nowhere, bro. So what? And I love what I'm doing, so, you know, fuck off, cousin. You feel me?
Yeah.
And yeah, that's what I told cats back in the day, way back in the 80s, bro.
Oh. That's wild. Now, the Freaky Executives, you know, what's behind the name?
My boy, my homie that I grew up with, Piero Ornelas, Piero El Malo, he made up the name. He's a crazy motherfucker. He just made up that name. I was actually on tour with Bill Summers when he put that group together. I came home from Europe, and he wanted me to come see his group and check him out and give him some critiques or whatever. I went and checked out his group, and I'm like, bro, you got to start rehearsing because his shit was not together, bro. So I started rehearsing this group because, you know, I had been playing with Confunction and Bill Summers. And that, man, those groups, if you ever seen them live, they put on a real show, man. It ain't no just no bullshit up on stage. It's no dry time for the entire show. You're going to have a concert the whole time. So what I told Pierre, I said, man, I'll help you put this thing together, but you got to be professional with it, bro. So, you know, we put it together from there, and I fired the drummer. I fired the keyboard player, I hired some horn players, and I hired another keyboard player and made it professional and got it together, and we got signed. Piero eventually quit the group. I don't know why. I guess he couldn't take the professionalism, but whatever. We got signed after we quit, though, so it didn't really matter.
Well, you guys were before Digital Underground, the original freaks in the industry. You know, literally, that's the name.
We were before Digital Underground. Yep. But,
man,
you know,
that's amazing history.
You know, but to be fair to my boy Piero, the group was never the same without him, man, because he was the main lead singer. I was like the side lead singer, but he was the main songwriter, lead singer guy. I would come to him with ideas for songs, and he would bring that shit to fruition, you feel me? So losing him was a big blow to the group. It was never the same afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, big chunk of what you guys were doing was gone.
Yeah.
Speaking of freaky and crazy, you know, I ask this to everybody we have on the show, and believe it or not, this shit runs rampant. Just yay or nay, whatever, man, you don't have to answer it. Did you ever see any, like, freaky, crazy shit in the industry, like occult-type parties or anything like that, or being that you were, you know, on different labels and whatnot?
Not. Did you say coke party?
No, a cult. I'm sure coke parties were everywhere. We've all seen those, you know.
Nah, I never seen no cult party, but I done seen some pretty nice after, you know, backstage parties with the Bar K. So there's some pretty freaky motherfuckers, man, the Bar K. Because I was on tour with the Bar K's. It was Bar K's, Confunction, Lakeside, a couple other soul groups back in the day. Yeah.
And what was this, the early 80s or late 70s?
Late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah. Oh, they like to have a good time. They like to go out and, you know. Well,
absolutely.
I can imagine, you know, you're performing. You know, the energy is high. The people are loving what you're doing, and you know, why not keep the party going as long as you can? I guess. You know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, man, that's wild. No, I asked that because, believe it or not, Scott, man, there's a lot of people who have had crazy experiences like that. You know, we had Russell Simmons' nephew on the show. He said he's seen ritualistic stuff in the offices of Def Jam. You know, it's, I guess, There's weird things with the higher up you get. I don't know. It's crazy.
I don't know. I'm not that high up.
Good thing you were spared. Good thing you were spared from that shit. But you know, you traveled and toured with all these legends, you know what I'm saying, doing legendary things yourself, and then you said, you know what, I'm just going to start producing this rap stuff, man. When did that really kick in for you, and who were some of your earlier clients?
Man, Little Rick was the first cat out of Richmond. Little Rick was the first guy to actually pay me to produce a rap record. And that was like
wow.
I guess, 90, 91 or 2 or something like that. Yeah.
This when he was on No Limit?
Little Rick?
Yeah.
No, he wasn't on No Limit at that time. He was on a little independent label out of Richmond.
Oh, okay. Pre No Limit. Okay, let me ask you this. Did you ever work with DJ Grandmaster Scratch?
No.
Oh, okay. He was out of Richmond as well. We just interviewed a lot of Richmond guys.
Early 90s. Did you ever interview Harm from the Rich?
No, I haven't. I never had the opportunity to interview him yet. But you produced for Lil Rick this around 91. When did you work with Mac Dre? Was it shortly after that? Or
I worked with Mac Dre when he worked with us on the Three Times Crazy compilation. The Hit the Gas compilation that Hit the Gas was on. And then I worked with him again right before he passed away.
Yeah. Such a trendsetter himself, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I remember. Because when Dre got out, you know, I started working with him right when he had got out. You know, he had done his bid, and he came home. He's like, "Bro, I don't want nothing slow. If I can't party to it, I ain't fucking with it, bro." He's like, "Man, give me some party music, bro." He didn't think I wanted to party, bro.
Yeah, he was ready, huh? All that time in.
At all time.
You know.
At all time.
Did you ever, you coming up in the Bay, did you ever have a chance to work with Pac at all or kick it with him?
I do wish, you know, I don't know if you guys know, but a guy tried to murder me in 03, and I wound up in a coma. I was in a coma for about a month, and, I had to teach myself to talk again. That's why I kind of slur a little bit. I'm not high, y'all. I'm not high at all. I'm just slurry. Anyway, when I was recovering from that situation, bro, I had a dream about Pac. And I swore that I had met, even though I had never met Pac, I had swore that I met him. I was sleepwalking through the hospital dreaming about Pac, that he was in the studio with me and we was jamming out to my music, bro. So in a sense, I did meet Pac. But he'd already passed away. But maybe he came to me, you know, from the other side in my dream. I don't know, but it was
absolutely
real. I slept, walked, and everything. I was sleepwalking through the hospital.
Well, man, we had, you know, Bushwick Bill on here, rest in peace, and Lord Infamous, rest in peace, and they both talked about, like, near-death experiences. You know, maybe it was something like that, maybe, or?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, but. Yeah.
And how long were you in the hospital for?
Well, I was in a coma for a month, and so then I had to have rehab. I had to teach myself how to talk again, bro. I mean, I knew all the words. I didn't have to learn words, but I couldn't move my mouth correctly. It was crazy, bro. So yeah, all together, I was probably in the hospital for about two or three months.
Wow, man! Did they ever get the guy who did it to you? Or?
Yeah, you know, what's cold is, like I said, back in the day when I first started doing rap music, my peers, jazz musicians, Latin music, you know, whatever, they're telling me, bro, you need to stop fucking with that rap shit. That shit is way too dangerous, bro, right? I'm like, bro, they love me. I can go to any ghetto in the Bay Area, bro. I'm good, bro. I'm a commodity. You don't understand, bro. Bay niggas ain't trying to hurt me. They trying to get things from me, bro. You feel me? They ain't trying to. A nigga can't kill me to get a beat from me, bro. You feel me? So anyway, yeah, the guy that tried to kill me was a jazz musician, bro. Okay, boom.
Wow. See,
yeah, and
wasn't even hip hop.
He's in jail now. Say what now?
It wasn't even hip hop. It was jazz.
Nope.
Yeah.
Yep.
Man, would he shoot you if you don't mind me asking? Or
no, he got me. Well, he shot at me, but he missed. But he got at me with a aluminum bat.
Oh man.
Yeah, and I wound up with 18 skull fractures, bro, and lived.
Man.
Yep. What saved me was that I jumped into the bay because I was like, man, niggas ain't trying to swim. I'm about to get away from this nigga. I'm about to jump my ass to the fucking bay. And I jumped into the bay in the cold ass water, cooled my head down, and kept my shit from blowing up on me, bro. And by the time, you know, the paramedics got there and saved my ass, the cold water was already saving me. Yeah.
Yeah, that was. Smart as hell right there, because the brain, you know, injury is swell. Yeah, like you said.
Yeah.
Keep it from swelling.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
And that's why I can talk. That's why I'm here.
Yeah. Almost 20 years later coming up.
Yeah.
Well, that's a beautiful thing, man. How about, after, you had a recovery, learn how to talk and everything. How long was it before you started making music again?
I got out of the hospital and went straight to the studio, bro. They told me you can only do a tour, one or 2 hours at a time. Man, my wife had to call me, Scotty, you better get out the studio, man. Come on. Yeah, I went straight back, bro. The next day that I got out the hospital, I went straight to the studio. Yeah.
Man, that's the love for the music, folks. That's what I'm talking about. I'm sure that's great.
Yeah,
that was great therapy for you too in your recovery, you know.
Yeah.
Getting all the coordination back and all that. What's weird is we had Little Rick on and he got shot in the head twice and he went to the hospital and he ended up leaving. they operated on him and he left before he was supposed to, and just
I remember that. Little Rick, that's my man. Little Rick, that's my man.
Man.
I remember hearing that he got shot and we all thought he was gone, and next thing you know, this nigga's right back. I'm like, okay. God has plans for you, bro.
He just bounced back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank God for both of you guys, man, to be here. Are you guys gonna do a project together now or something? I mean, that would be dope.
Man, bro, I don't even know where Little Rick is. If you want to shoot me his number, I'll hit him up. We can do something.
Hell yeah, man.
I have not been in touch with him. But yeah, shoot me his number and I'll give him a call. We'll make something happen. I'll let him know that you were the catalyst that made it happen, bro.
Hey, man, that's always appreciated. We've done that a couple times on the show, man. It's always good to be able to create something like that or be part in it, like a spark the idea.
Yeah.
I got the homie from France, man. He's going to ask you a couple questions. Sin, are you there, brother?
Yes, yes,
okay.
Hi, Scott.
Hello.
Hi,
how are you doing?
I'm fine. Hi, legendary world, what to call. Your legend is in the bay, for sure. Can you tell us about the songs Sicarophan, Get Em, you produced along Tony Capone for the album Stuck in Shapes of Tweet, I'm Crazy. It was a very dope song. Can you tell us about this one?
Which song are you talking about?
I talk about Sucarofa and again, you did.
Sick of Luffa, yeah, Sick of Luffa. Yeah, that's a good song right there. Yeah, well, I created that song with, I forgot the producer's name. It was me and another producer from East Oakland. I've forgotten his name by now, but that was a collaboration. Good times. I mean, I'm not quite sure which one to tell you about it. Really, man, the music speaks for itself. I can't say anything else but give you the music and let you listen to it, and that's what it is.
Yeah. I hope was to work with Tony Capone because he was on the album too.
Bro, you have to say that again because it was hard for me to understand the accent. Kind of fit.
Oh, sorry. How it was to work with Tony Capone.
Oh,
Tone Capone.
Yeah. That's my man, yeah. Tone Capone. Me and Tone Capone go all the way back to the Surf MCs. Like I was saying before, I had a group called the Surf MCs, and when I got signed to Warner Brothers with a different group, Tone Capone actually came into the Surf MCs and became the DJ for that group. He was a DJ before he was a producer, and I knew him as a DJ before he became a producer. And so, you know, when Tone decided he was going to start producing, the first person that he called was me, because he needed to take his samples and get them in tune with his bass line or whatever, and he didn't know anyone else that could make a sample be in the right key as whatever other samples, because back in the day with hip hop, you would combine different samples together and make one whole sound. And when Tone was trying to combine these different samples together, he wasn't sure how to get the samples to be in the right key together. So he would call me up and have me come over there and help him out. And yeah, me and Tone started working on a lot of songs together after that.
Yeah. Also, Mike Dean was on the mix for this album. Do you see him with him to work with him at this time?
Mike Dean, yeah, he's
yes, sir.
great producer, great. He's a great guitar player, great musician.
Yeah.
I only worked with Mike Dean a little bit because actually Mike Dean mixed on Keep It On The Real. He mixed on Stack and Chip's album. And really, Mike Dean's connection with Tone Capone came through Scarface and Rap-A-Lot Records. So, you know, Mike Dean wasn't really connected too heavily with Mike Dean. It was more Tone Capone and Mike Dean connected together.
Yeah. You can say as one of the originators of the mob sound along Studio Tone, Mike Mosley, DJ Darrell, for you, who started the mob sound? It was Studio Tone, maybe?
Studio Tone that started the mob sound?
Yeah, did he start the mob the mob sound in the Bay?
Yeah.
Ah, bro.
Sam Bostick, maybe?
You know what? I mean, I guess. I can't really say. I don't know. I mean, to me, it's all music. I mean, I really don't know what the mob sound is. People say mob sound, this sound, that sound. Man, I just make music, bro. Y'all call it what you want.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt.
You got a job song, so. Yeah, it was Booyah with Falsibo, Till My Casket Drops. It was a classic.
Yeah,
right on. Can you tell us about this one, how you produce this one? You got a smooth vibe on it. It was Booyah, crazy shit.
Oh, man, to be honest with you, brother, I appreciate that you like that. My favorite song that I did with Sebo was 365. My trait, you know, my 365. It's a song, excuse me.
Yeah.
It was a song that he wrote in the third person of a gun. Like, you know, the gun was the character in the song. So he was speaking from the aspect of a gun talking to you. That was my favorite song that I ever did with Sebo. But
Yeah, as far as some, the game
as far as Booyah, go ahead.
Now you did Deadly Game too. For the same album.
Oh yeah, Deadly. Oh, Deadly Game, man. Well, Deadly Game. That game, that song, was the first song to ever get someone arrested, bro.
Yeah.
Because
it was. It revoked
because
his probation,
of the lyrical
right?
content. Yeah, bro. Yeah, because of the lyrical content on the song, the DA arrested him for what he said on that song, man.
Yeah,
and that song is a classic, bro. That beat is so hot.
For sure.
Bro, the first time I heard that beat away from the studio, I was working with somebody in Hunters Point. I think it was Juice in Hunters Point. And someone came around the corner banging it out their car. And I heard it. And I'm like, wait, that sound like me? Oh, wait a minute. Oh, that is me. Man, I was juiced. That thing sounded so good.
That caused a lot of controversy.
You didn't want to absorb so far Wicked Streets of Lil Rick. It's by Young G. It's a deep song, too, for Lil Rick.
I'm not sure. What about Young G?
Yeah. You put it as a song, yes?
Is that a song that I did for Sebo? It was called Young G?
For Little, now
I don't know. Lil Rick.
Talking about Little Rick,
no,
Wicked
Lil
Streets
Rick.
Now.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Wicked Streets, Lil Rick, yeah. Yeah, man, that's some classic music that I did for him.
Yeah,
that was like the first, off the Lil Rick, the Wicked Streets, that's the first rap shit that I ever really did, bro. For real. Man, it's classic. I was listening to it the other day. I'm like, man, I was on one right there, boy. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, classic.
It's history. You know, Lil Rick is well known.
What's your homie name from France? What's your name, bro?
Sin. His name's Sin.
Sin. Selecta.
Hey, let me ask Have you ever heard of the drummer, the musician called Manu Katché?
Yeah, of course. In France.
You heard of Manu Katché?
I played
in a group with Manu Katché.
Ah, no, I don't know him, yes. Crazy.
Listen to him. Stop. Did you hear what I just said?
Yeah, I know about him, yes. Manu Katché.
Okay, I played in a group with Manu Katché. You could go on YouTube and look up Ryuichi Sakamoto live heartbeat tour in Japan, and you will see me playing with Manu Katché live, bro.
Okay, right. Dope. I would see it.
That's my man. Manu Katché, I love that boy, man. Me and him were good friends on the road, man. Good friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
Your musical, Sin, thank you, brother. Your music history, it goes back, man. I want to talk a little bit about that Deadly Game again, though, real quick. Like you said, Sebo was the first guy actually arrested. Now, 2 Live Crew, they were arrested for performing indecency in public or something at that time, but no one was ever arrested for lyrics before. Did they, when they arrested him, you know, that was insane, man. What was he like during that time? Was he trying to fight it, or were they coming after you about it? Or
no blowback toward me at all. But Sebo, I think he did have to sit down for like a month or two. But
crazy.
It was crazy, you but know, he got him on MTV, and he sold a lot more records because of that shit, though. So, again.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
You feel me?
Definitely, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you, you know, since, you know, you've been putting out a lot of music since, man, what can we look forward to from you in the future, brother?
Hopefully, you know, I just did some stuff with Kick Sneak, and hopefully that'll be dropping pretty soon. You know, his daughter is a singer. His daughter named Kennedy is a great singer, and I've been working on some music with her as well. She's an up-and-coming artist. She actually hasn't dropped anything yet, but I guess the first thing that she will drop will be something that I'm working on her with. You know, I'm working with Bill Summers out of New Orleans. We have this woman named High Heel Doula. She's, man, dope lyricist, dope poetic, and she's really nice. I'm also doing some stuff out of New Orleans with this group called Club Kid. We're a nonprofit where we get together with kids from the area, them all about music and about how to make money in the music field. You know, teach them how to come to the studio and make a record, teach them how to put the record out, teach them how to, you know, get on their social media game and advertise their thing. You know, give them the game on how to make money in this field. So that's really what I'm doing right now. Also, I also have another artist named Aaliyah. She's out the Bay Area. She's coming up, and you'll hear from her very soon.
So it sounds like you're staying pretty busy. That's what's up.
Yeah, got to. That's all I do. That's all I can do.
Definitely, man. Well, I'll tell you what. If people want to get at you for production, man, what's the best way?
Find me on Instagram or Facebook, One Drop Scott, or Drop Scott on Facebook, One Drop Scott on Instagram, or hit you up and you can pass on the information from me, bro.
Definitely, man. I really appreciate it. One of my favorite tracks you ever did was It's Going Down, Selly Cell.
Yeah.
Man, what was it like working with him?
Man, Selly, he's hella cool, you know, just laid back, just like his persona, just hella cool. You know, actually, they came in, the song is a Keith Sweat song, you know, that song is a replay of the Keith Sweat joint. And they came in, was like, man, we want to redo this song right quick. So I listened to it and chopped it and, you know, changed it up a little bit and did that thing. E-40 was in the room with us. And, you know, it's funny because the whole Fashizi thing, that came from the Three Times Crazy camp, bro. Your boy Spencey was the one that came to the studio with all that. Actually, Selly Cell, Spencey, and E-40, everybody was in the room. Spencey came in. He had just was hanging out with this guy named Mad from West Oakland, who basically was the guy that came up with the whole Fashizi, Easy Sheezy, whatever thing. And Spencey came in, was going crazy with it, bro. And E-40 overheard it and was like, man. Next thing you know, E-40 came out with the shit on the song, bro. Then, boom, now you got Snoop Dogg using it. And this nigga put the L on it after I already. Nigga, I was the one to put the L on the Fashizi, cousin. Me, I'm the first guy, cousin.
Wow.
Yes.
That's wild.
Yeah, say that.
There's a little slanguage history for us, man.
Slanguage for sure. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, E-40, that's the slangiest brother right there, man. He be coming with him all day long. But he be ear hustling as well to get some of that, because that's what you got to do. You got to ear hustle to get the slang, you feel me? You got to listen to what's going on around
the Bay
you. You figure
is
out,
a different
you figure out
language. Different language in the Bay. That's why the Loonies had that little dictionary thing in the insert of the Operation Stackola. No, that's wild, man.
Hey, bro. This is how old I am, bro. Check it out. After I had been in L.A., I'm sorry, after I had been in the Bay Area for a while, I went back down to L.A. to visit some of my friends. And I was using hella. And it was like, hella? Hella? What's hella? Why are you saying hella? We started hella way back in the 70s, bro.
I always say that on the show, man. That shit's hella dope. Go back in the archives.
That came way back in, that started way back in the way back days, bro.
Wow.
And like I said, when I would go to LA and use hella, they was like, man, what? It was some new shit to them.
Man, that's what I'm talking about. No, man, I interviewed Keke for the cover of Murder Dog, man, and, you know, a couple years back, you know, he got shot a few times, actually. He's a survivor,
yeah.
too, man, just like you and Little Rick, man. You guys are all survivors out there in the Bay. So definitely want to give positive vibes to him. And you said his daughter's doing music now, too, huh? So we can look forward to that.
Look forward to it. She's a dope singer, man, dope singer.
Man, that's what I'm talking about. Well, man, we're going to get out of here. And before we do, though, I want to give you the floor, man. If you want to give any shout-outs or anything, man, it's all yours, bro.
Oh, well, I want to give a shout-out to the Most Honorable MH. Give a shout-out to the Thug Lords, Mad Max, my boy. All my folks up in the Bay Area, I love all y'all. My wifey, Fumi. And, you know, and that's pretty much it, man. And my granddaughter, Simone, and my stepson, Damien. Love y'all. Y'all stay safe.
Man, thank you, brother. It was real good talking to you, man, and learning some history tonight. Really appreciate it. Hopefully we can do it again in the future. Man, because it's going down.
I don't know, brother. Whenever...
Tonight, you know I got to go get fitted. Hit the mall to get it, then I stopped to get my hair twisted up in ponytails and sell a bill back to the grain and let my people know, you know what's going down tonight, man. We living. I got the 411 on the bumping. We riding with them heaters if they funk, and then we dumping. I'm slumping in the meantime. My speakers are jumping up out they box. I see these fries choosing, man. They sprung on my Shirley locks. Made the block and they was all up on my bumpers trying to pull me over. But now I get to nothing when I'm sober. Hit the gas and smoked it up, smashed off a Mouty. Bending corners laughing cause I left their car cloudy. Went to my partner house and they was posted splitting Vegas. Bet $5 a game on Madden 95 on Sega. Taking out the room, fools laying on the ground. They better have some dip back cause tonight it's going down. Now we slamming bones. Up in my hood it's on. We make a casino up out your home. Head up, I sit some down fast. But they stash, yelling stand up when you pass. Turn over your bones and give me your cash. I hit the steps with the money I want. And they give me your photo. A00 on the scene, I'm an OG on the end for show. I get twisted up in knots, purr, straight sloppy. Prize breeders on my nuts and haters wanna mock me. Can't understand how deep I get when I spit this real on real to real. Straight up out the hills, doing a minute wheel, steel toe, boot stomping, bobbing my head to the womp and getting my knees dirty. When I'm stinging among the dice for Thompson, side betting Lil Joe in the duck, now watch me grow. I let him go and watch that double deuce lock up a show. I talk bad and clam, walking around and making my ram, snatching my money up off the ground, cause tonight it's going down. Finally nightfall, jumped in my 7-4, smashing cause I'm tight, y'all. Check to see if the tech was on the passenger seat, I need some heat. The only way y'all must creep late night through these faulty streets. Been the block and seen the whole crew on the counter, smelling that aroma, talking about the bump and coming up on the super bad, something cool. You know how we do it, touch him with some game and fill him with some do it fluid. We get the show, it's about 30 players belling in. Give me some C&B, some Hennessy and Seagram's gin. Lemon squeeze, but no chasing, fool, we straight lacing. Jump in the mob and punch it to the bumpers, players racing. We pull pulls up and see you posted outside. Get me down, I'm in the zone, ready to take me something home. Wall to wall, breeders top notch, this maintenance going down. At this bump, my fam, tonight, fool, is going down.